Welcome to New Legacy Radio with Christine Erickson. Are you someone who doesn't have children by circumstance, choice, or chance? This show is for our collective community. Are you someone who influences policy, DEI initiatives, or media narratives? Learn how you can co-create inclusive, equitable policies and environments for people without children. Now, here is your host, Christine Erickson.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Christine Erickson, your host and the founder of New Legacy Institute. The Institute focuses on social and policy equity for the collective community of people without children. Today, we have the opportunity to look at the dimensions of the global impact of pronatalism. We've addressed pronatalism several times on this show. And today we have a very special guest to look at the global dimensions of this. So often we spend time, which is really important, looking at our individual identities around pronatalism and the different communities within our community of being child-free, childless, ambivalent, and all of the spaces in between on the spectrum. And then we sort of move into those environments that where we are impacted as well, such as what we focus on the workplace, how we're treated in the medical community, things like that. And today we get to look at this larger scope of how does pronatalism really impact us collectively and globally? What happens in the environmental space? How are people making their choices based on cultures of pronatalism? All of these dimensions that sometimes we don't sort of get to lift our heads and look up at this 360-degree view of what pronatalism really means in all of these spaces. Today, we are very fortunate to be speaking with Nandita Bajaj. She is the Executive Director of Population Balance. Population Balance offers educational solutions to address the impacts of human overpopulation and overconsumption on the planet, for people and animals. She also is the host of the Overpopulation Podcast. She is on the faculty of the Institute for Humane Education at Antioch University. Nandita she teaches two really amazing courses. One is on human rights, and the other one is on pronatalism and overpopulation. This is the first graduate course that explores the impacts of pronatalism and anthropocentrism on reproductive, ecological, and intergenerational justice. Nandita has also had multiple careers. She also has a background in aerospace engineering and education, and her master's degree is in humane education. Every time Nandita speaks to these issues, I feel like we get to go deeper and deeper into them. And it's just such a gift that she brings, not only to Population Balance as an incredible organization, but in the space where she teaches and the conversations that she holds. Welcome, Nandita. Thank you so much. I appreciate you being here, and we're excited to hear from you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here and to be talking with you.
Excellent. So as I was saying earlier and that I shared with you, I'm very excited for us to have this conversation about, you know, more of a collective and certainly global perspective around the impact of pronatalism. I think the way that it is integrated at all levels of our lives and, you know, both in ourselves, in our cultures, and in how that permeates and impacts the environment is such a beautiful perspective that you bring and that Population Balance focuses on. And also to get back to highlighting the conversation around population, and Population Balance is just such a perfect term for it, which is why your organization has a great name.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. So I guess we can start, looking at just the history of reproduction and moving into reproductive responsibility and autonomy. Those are really huge conversations, and yet they kind of set the platform for what we're speaking about today.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. And of course, there are a couple of aspects. So I work in the space of population, environment, environmental preservation, the non-human world, protection, human rights, and of course, reproductive rights is one subset of human rights. And especially within the population space, the idea of reproductive rights is so fraught, partly because, you know, even though there's widespread agreement among scientists that population growth is a major driver of a lot of the environmental crises that we're facing, including climate change, including biodiversity loss, you know, et cetera, a lot of governments, international development agencies, environmental and even human rights NGOs have in recent decades largely abandoned the population conversation. And there's good reason for it, although I think it has become exaggerated. And that is the part where I really want to focus on the aspect of reproductive rights and autonomy is, you know, for a lot of these groups, the idea of talking about population brings up nervousness around what population stabilization and reduction entails. And there is this idea that inevitably it's going to require some form of reproductive coercion to prevent people from having children so that we can control, quote unquote, the population.
Right.
And we absolutely must acknowledge and denounce all forms of reproductive control that have taken place in the name of sometimes population control and sometimes just in the name of race purity, as we know well from the history of the eugenics movement that started in the United States, marginalized, you know, a lot of poor and disabled populations, and then went on to inspire the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. And then, of course, later versions of the eugenics movement moved on to target people of color, specifically Black populations, Native American populations, as well as Latinx people. And, you know, different echoes of that showed up in different countries. So India had its own sterilization campaigns where at least 8 million people were coercively sterilized. Puerto Rico had a similar campaign where, because of the U.S. government's efforts to control their population, a third of the Puerto Rican women went through forced sterilizations. And so, you know, there is absolutely a dark history when it comes to nationalistic or, you know, more kind of ethnocentric goals of the fear of, quote unquote, being outbred by certain populations that has created this silencing of the population discourse. You know, at the exclusion of course, really incredible and positive family planning efforts and initiatives that have also helped move a lot of people out of really horrific situations, such as poverty, such as child marriage, such as FGM, female genital mutilation, the AIDS crisis, et cetera, that usually gets sidelined when we speak about population, family planning efforts. But of course, my area of interest in this field came from this understanding that reproductive coercion and the violation of reproductive rights happens through two different ways. The one that we often talk about is the reproductive coercion that prevents people from having children and prevents certain people from having children. What we don't think about when we think of reproductive coercion or even quote unquote population control to meet demographic goals is reproductive coercion to force reproduction through pronatalism, through coercive methods to promote people, especially women, into having large families. And of course, you know, if we start looking at countries around the world, pronatalism acts on a spectrum where you have, I mean, pronatalism exists everywhere. There's right. no place in the world where we are not under the profound influence of pronatalism. Right. And of course, that's something you've been exploring for a long time in your own work. But what we don't often think of is the spectrum of pronatalism. There are countries like ours. I live in Canada. You know, there are strong aspects of pronatalism. We see that in media, in culture, in baby bonuses and child tax credits, the glorification of parenthood, you know, the exclusion of adoption as an option, the exclusion of childless, child-free, or adoptive families from the narrative, the dominant narrative. But then, you know, you go to other countries around the world where fertility rate is quite high, and you look at the different aspects of pronatalism there, right. and you realize that countries with the highest fertility rates, for the most part, also happen to be countries where women or individuals with female reproductive parts have the least degree of personal and reproductive autonomy. And they are largely driven by social norms. So if patriarchal, religious, militaristic structures within the certain cultures set the social norms and say, you know, 7 to 8 children is what makes you a worthy person in our community, that determines people's, especially women's, self-worth. You know, there are a lot of countries where childlessness, for any reason, is seen as a communicable disease or an object for marginalization, for, you know, abuse, neglect, divorce, etc. And, you know, you're made to believe that there is something wrong with you if you cannot produce offspring. So there are a lot of human and reproductive, you know, reproductive rights violations embedded within pronatalism. And so we must understand that pronatalism happens to be at the heart of our unchecked population growth. And that by silencing population-related conversations, we're actually silencing, we're actually basically carrying the water to the patriarchal structures that benefit from oppressing marginalized people, especially, you know, those who can reproduce.
Absolutely. Thank you for that really amazing introduction and foundation, Nandita. I really appreciate it and all of the aspects that you touched on. And I think that last sentence was really sums it up, right? What does pronatalism feed? And who does it not feed, for, you know, lack of a better wording? It's, yeah, who does it deprive and who does it benefit?
Exactly.
And I think if we can speak a little bit to that stigma that you mentioned, you know, not being able to reproduce or not even reproducing to the levels expected, let's say, you know, of what does it mean to have a family or a large family, how that's defined. Stigma will move you into or maintain the definition of self-worth or even success, if you will,
absolutely,
depending on the culture and the place that you are living. And I think that understanding that stigma and how we get to these larger conversations, not only the global and collective dimension that we're talking about, but even moving out of that individual space with the depth and impact of this stigma is really huge.
I totally agree with you. Yes. I think we simply cannot understate the profound influence and control that we are under when it comes to our reproductive capacities. Mm-hmm. You know, you've covered at in depth the aspect of womanhood, especially being tied to motherhood. Mm-hmm. And of course, our reproductive capacity can lead to incredible gifts. You know, biological children, it can be a profound journey for someone who takes that on through autonomous, authentic mm-hmm. decision-making. And right. It can be a beautiful path. But at the same time, reproduction has been used as a tool by so many structures that are in power, whether it's religious communities and leaders looking for more followers who mm-hmm. marginalize, openly stigmatize people mm-hmm. who cannot or do not fit that norm, whether you right. choose singlehood, whether you do not marry, you know, or you have religious leaders actively banning access to family planning services mm-hmm. if their demographic goals, quote unquote, are not being met. Right. We're starting to see that, we have mm-hmm. had that for generations, for millennia, where governments and politicians, mm-hmm. Economists who yes. rely on a constant supply of workers, cheap laborers that they can mm-hmm. exploit to grow the wealth on the top, rely on reproduction. Mm-hmm. Politicians rely on reproduction to increase the taxpayer base for some ridiculous metric to pay yes. for, you know, the aging population. Like, there are no other creative ways that we can right. think of. other than
I know. I go back to basic, you know, I mean, I went to business school, right? So I used to look at economic models and I would always tell my students, I'm like, now someone came up with this. Okay. Yes, this is yes. a model. You know, you put your thoughts toward this and what do you think about this and where we're going? And I always, you know, within the framework of what we're speaking to, I think how can we or the governments or economists not be more creative and actually look at what is fact? What is the population now? What are diverse family structures like? What is it like for people who are not having children, and meet that rather than forcing a model that it already doesn't work?
Yes.
If you exactly. need coercion, it's not a working model.
Yes.
It's not a successful model. Yeah, I mean, and of course, everything that has been happening in the United States, I mean, that pressure has always been there since Roe v. Wade. But now to have that overturned and these same questions about economic models and taxpayers and, you know, all these projections about even what these individuals will do and who they will be, even though they don't exist, is a whole nother conversation. But certainly we are feeling, or not feeling, but experiencing all of that here as well, as you know. And it is just mind-boggling to me to keep forcing something to fit something that doesn't make sense.
Yes, yes.
For the sake of what and whom is what I always ask. And, you know, we can answer that question. We know that, but it is harming populations. It is harming people.
It absolutely is. And, you know, the United States is actually a great example of what happens when like you're saying, old models are being used to define what success means. Our governments are so obsessed with using a GDP, the growth domestic product, as a metric of success, not human well-being, not happiness index, you know, not access to fresh air and water and nature, but money. And it's become so insidious and sinister that you know, when demographic goals are not being able to be met through other more subtle manipulative pronatalist policies, governments turn to coercive pronatalism. It is kind of scientific if you look at what is happening around the world with the rise of the right-wing populism, nationalism, in Hungary, in Poland, in Iran, in the US, where there is this backsliding happening of democratic liberal values, where communities of feminists or LGBTQ plus individuals rising is being seen as a threat to quote unquote traditional family values that ensure nuclear families, that ensure reproduction. And when patriarchal powers start to see the rise of liberal values as a threat, you know things are going to get bad, because those in power will do what is necessary for them to meet their goals. And the criminalization of abortion in the US is one of the many examples around the world of where such tactics and mechanisms are being put into place to basically hold down and oppress those that are able to reproduce and are, you know, mainly are able to reproduce.
Right, exactly. And back to what you were saying, I love when you're speaking to the happiness index. I believe Bhutan started that, the National Happiness Index that they call it. And, you know, looking at access to fresh water, fresh air, being in nature, access to that well-being, and even just stepping back and taking an intake just for the United States. If you look at well-being in terms of access to healthcare, the general health of the population, of physical and other health and mental health, this is kind of where what we have been doing has gotten us.
Exactly.
You know, which is a whole another piece of that, in addition and beyond the reproductive conversation, but within it. And that brings me to, you had spoken about reproductive responsibility, which I think is also often a quiet conversation.
Right. Yes. So the aspect of reproductive responsibility is the second layer of our identity as more than just the human species. But even more than just those who can reproduce. If you start kind of expanding your sphere of compassion and understanding of who we are and what got us here, and that everything we are, we owe it to the planet and to all of the living beings that contribute to all the gifts that we receive from this planet. We actually could not exist without all of the gifts that are given to us in the form of fresh air, in the form of water and food. It's not even a matter of expanding our circle of compassion, because that gives the idea that we are somehow separate and we need to now include more individuals and more beings into our consciousness. It's that we are a huge part, like we are a subset of the larger planetary planetary kind of this incredible existence. Mm-hmm. I don't want to use the word, you know, miracle, because but it is. It's kind of an incredible living planet that we mm-hmm. are a part of. And everything we do, all of our actions have impacts.
Yeah.
And, you know, in kind of the reproductive rights and reproductive responsibility space, even though reproductive autonomy has not by any means been achieved for majority of the world's population, mm-hmm. I would say that as much as we're fighting, and we must continue to fight for reproductive autonomy, we must also keep in mind that for those of us who have access to that privilege of choice, of true choice, where we can think about whether or not and when and if and how many and with whom we want to procreate, to also understand the implications of our actions, our consumptive actions, but also our procreative actions on other beings, on our potential children at a time when the world is in peril, and on the planet as a whole.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. Today, we're speaking with Nandita Bajaj, and she is from Population Balance. She is the executive director. We're speaking about reproductive responsibility and all kinds of wonderful things that we will continue after we take a short pause. We'll be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
New Legacy Institute is committed to equitable and inclusive change for people without children. We invite you to become a member of New Legacy Institute and to share what matters most to you. Participate in our research surveys, upcoming webinars, and efforts to influence policy, media narratives, and DEI initiatives that fully recognize our community. Check us out online at newlegacyinstitute.com. Join us today.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You are listening to New Legacy Radio with Christine Erickson. Now back to the show. Here is Christine Erickson.
Welcome back, everybody. We are continuing our conversation with Nandita Bajaj. She is the executive director of Population Balance. And we are going to continue our conversation on reproductive responsibility.
Thank you, Christine. So, yes, I was kind of alluding to, for those of us who have the privilege to make more authentic and autonomous reproductive choices, two things. One is how much responsibility that privilege carries, given that majority of people in the world do not have that level of autonomy, not reproductive, let alone, or not even personal, let alone reproductive.
Right.
So it really is, I feel deeply that it is our responsibility to help not just people within our smaller kind of sociopolitical identities that align with our thinking to elevate their voices, but also the voices of people around the world who do not have that level of choice-making ability available to them. And by expanding kind of our own identity to include more people and to include mm-hmm. the non-human world, while we're at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I said something at the beginning, which I don't remember now, but to that effect of, you know, I think when you're in the space of the larger community of not having children as one identity, as one portal, it's very easy to stay. It's not easy, but there's a tendency to stay in that journey, right? For some, it's a loss. For some, it's a choice. And where we have that greater autonomy, looking at, okay, within this, who do we get to be?
Yes.
That's the way I look at it. You know, who do I get to be now? Or as you say, you know, what am I responsible for? Or what can I be responsible for? Where there's an invitation there to look at not only other human beings that we can, you know, work to create that autonomy with and for, but also where all those patterns of impact that you speak to so brilliantly, you know, who am I being that in that as an individual? Who are we being as a collective community? And then beyond that, as a community that is bridged to the larger community.
Yes. Yes. I love what you're bringing up there. Cause you're right. Anytime any of us have an awakening in some way, whether it is to move past, you know, marginalization of a choice, whether it's childlessness by circumstance, or whether it's, for me, it was an awakening when I realized that I had the choice to not have children. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a very traditional country in India until I was 17 with this idea that, of course, I'm going to have children and I'm going to have two because that was the norm in my country. Mm-hmm. And even though I never felt any kind of a deep inkling or desire toward motherhood, I never questioned it until I met my partner in my mid-20s and we had this discussion. Mm-hmm. And just the idea of having the choice presented to me. I was living in Canada. The choice surely was there, but it was felt like a choiceless choice where it was hidden from me. Mm-hmm. And so when I realized after that conversation that I could choose not to have children, it was the most liberated I had felt because it lined up with my own values, you know, toward environmentalism, toward minimalism, toward self-realization. And I've, you know, that happened 10 years ago and that carried, had a huge impact on my life where I felt, wow, I could have easily gone the other way and made that decision. And might as well have been one of the people, as a lot of the literature showing up, who regret making that choice. Another choice that is marginalized and not shown in our narratives is people who regret becoming parents, you know, or who abuse or neglect children as a result of so many different traumatic experiences. But anyway, to go back to your point about transcending these identities, the path to becoming child-free was the beginning, I felt, of this transformational journey for me. Mm-hmm. It definitely is a part of my identity, but it's not all of who I am. It's just something that allowed me to then realize other things that I am and can be, and like peeling back layers of an onion and just keep questioning, you know, what else am I seeing? Pronatalism is the water in which we're all swimming, but so are a lot of other things. Just because we have somehow challenged or dismantled pronatalism in our own lives to a certain degree doesn't mean that we are not constantly being socialized and manipulated to make other choices.
This is a bit outside of this, but I always think about Yeah, all the other connected things, even on an individual level, like the idea of inheritance.
Yes.
So if you don't have children, well, you must find a niece or nephew. And of course, we all have one, is the assumption,
right.
What those relationships are. And I started thinking a long time ago about, for those of us who are in this situation, as you know, on unceded territories, unceded land,
yes.
In this country for nations and tribes. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is another opportunity,
yes.
to do something. I don't need to do it in that direction. You know, if I choose, and there are a lot of things, you move and whatever, but it's something that I've really focused on, and a conversation I hope to have with more of us in the future in this community. Because again, what are the opportunities,
yes.
to make a different impact, a new legacy, if you will, quote unquote. Yeah,
I really
look forward to those things.
I really love that you're bringing that up. And it's a kind of a new, more nascent thought that I've had, and I've been thinking to my husband about it, is for those of us who are leaning into our own history of privilege and power and oppression, and we're all somewhere on the spectrum and having... played a part in exploitation of, let's, you know, talk about people to start. And you brought up Indigenous people and people who have been colonized, people who have been racialized, marginalized based on ability, based on race, gender, orientation, etc. Something we've been talking about, you know, you brought up legacy, is... what would it mean for us to think about our contribution to correcting and repairing, and like making reparations through procreative responsibility, through not continuing on that cycle of privilege, by continuing to grow our wealth. And all of the privileges, you know, whether they come through or other forms, by not continuing on that legacy and putting that effort, the time, money, resources that we have by not having more children that then inherit all of our privileges and wealth, by turning that over to those that we have played a part in oppressing. It can happen in so many ways, but imagine the huge, profound impact of doing that by not procreating. I know it's a very new conversation, but I feel like since we're going in all different types of controversial things, why not add that in?
Yeah. And I think, and, you know, not procreating out by whatever means, and then not continuing the other pronatalist patterns.
Yes.
You know, that we feel like, oh, now we have to find a solution to this, you know, which goes into other things too about, or even chosen family or beneficiaries, right?
Yes.
You know, why does it have to be a person? Why does it have to be a person I'm related to? Can it be a nation? Can it be, you know, all kinds of questions that I think need to be opened from a policy perspective.
Yes.
In some ways. And then, but from the social aspect and our social responsibility, I feel very, very strongly and drawn to that. And as you said, they are new conversations, but I think it's another privilege of choice to redirect those things, you know, into a best direction, you know, and those can be some of our next practices in our community, or that's what I see it, you know, and I know I'm really jumping ahead that we are in this conversation, but I'm so grateful that we're having it because I mean it, you know.
I am too.
Yeah.
I am too. And, you know, to the... part that you mentioned about giving back, something that, you know, I've been waking up to in the last few years is my own relationship to the non-human world. And another layer of, or swimming pool that we're in, is the relationship to the non-human world, the language that we use, the way that we see and other those that are not part of our species, even though we can see their feelings, we can see their expressions, we can see their intentionality, we have somehow created this divide from a young age to make ourselves believe that we are superior to all other beings. And somehow we have right to treat them abysmally and to exploit them and to use them as resources and tools and entertainment. And to realize that that's yet another way in which we have othered.
And
privilege has played a huge part across cultures. So what would it mean to that layer in our inclusion conversations and include not just all of the different identities within the human species, but also include all of the incredible millions and millions of non-human species that have every right to be here and to experience this incredible life as much as we do. And that, what would it mean to direct our time, money, resources in helping liberate them as we are liberating people within our own species? Liberation and compassion is not a limited scope. We can't, we don't have to focus on one piece that I'm only going to focus on the child-free choice or the childlessness or this community or that. We have the capacity to for incredible love, for incredible compassion, and it's infinite. We don't have to limit ourselves to one identity. We really can transcend and include all of who we are, but then also include all the other beings that contribute to our identity.
I love, I appreciate this so much, this conversation, and you know what you bring forth, what population balance brings forth. I, looking at, you know, and recognizing reverence for the culture of other species, the cultures of other species is just so pertinent. I mean, not only for our own learning, but for a mutuality in existence. I loved, I was going, trying to go back to something that you said about, not just this community. It's, you speak so to my heart and to my, you know, my, my longer term vision, even with the Institute, in that, you know, I see this as a portal. We have this connected identity on this one level. That is named just, it's a descriptor, you know, people without children. I'm not, I'm talking about child free or where it's, then we start, you know, be identifying at a personal level, a more personal level, but having that as a portal to bring this community into those things that you're speaking to. Because we're the basis of, you know, why this exists is pronatalism. It's not even necessarily that because we all don't have children. It's because of pronatalism. We need to do something about it. And this is the portal in the community that I and we are coming into it. But the idea of new legacy, which is, you know, a contradiction in language, and also it was a bit flipped because I always thought, I didn't understand how children or people could be someone else's legacy or a horse, for example. So I just, it was just, it was all of that. So that's what that means. But that it is to bring us together in this space so that we can move into these other spaces that you and I are talking about today. You know, into a full living in that way and recognition of who else exists. Not only in a human space of rights and autonomy, but beyond, and our impact. So, you know, it's why I'm so appreciative of what you're saying today, what you teach, what Population Balance is doing. It's just this is how I think, you know, looking at all of those things. And sometimes to start a conversation or to bring these things, you need to step back and start where we are.
Yes.
And I feel like that is the effort that we're making, even as the Institute right now. But it really is to move things to these greater places. So I can't thank you enough for having this conversation with me today.
Well, right back at you. Thank you for opening this conversation.
It becomes like a hurry up and wait, right? When you can see.
Yes.
When you can see all of that. And it's like, okay, but we have to have this conversation first. And we have to, you know, and I do think there is something about creating a sort of a public power, if you will, public narrative within and that can come from the collective community of people without children and people who have had autonomy.
Yes.
And people who have not. But it's a place to come together to have those conversations and to see how we can make some of those changes, you know?
I agree. I think whether it's by choice or circumstance, mm-hmm. I feel like people within this community who do not have children mm-hmm. somehow have been given, mm-hmm. Whether it's again by choice or by circumstance, a new direction to figure out what their identity is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think, even though it may not feel like for so many people who didn't choose it, mm-hmm. but ideally, if you're still able to move beyond that, and come to a place of recognizing that we are so much bigger than our reproductive capacities.
Yes.
And there are so many ways of connecting with others and to express love.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's as if we've been given a chance or a gift to redefine what love and what family, and as you are doing, what legacy can mean. And, I think everyone mm-hmm. can do that, but I feel that people within this community have an extra special privilege mm-hmm. because there comes, without that extra responsibility of raising human beings, comes time, resources, money, and all of this brain and intellectual creativity that you can use to come up with solutions for a lot of the world's problems, but also new ways of defining mm-hmm. identity that is not limited to the way it's been defined for us or being forced upon us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just say this quickly, but the idea of like what, you know, traits are assigned to parents or what is mother, you know, what is being motherly, for example. It's not that to negate those things, but that we also have those things. They're human traits,
exactly.
They're human characteristics, you know,
yes.
And how do we get to bring that forward? And even if it's not living beyond that, how do we live with that, with
yes.
our childlessness or with our child-free choice, you know? So it's transcending it and it's living it with it in a powerful way.
Yes.
So I really love that perspective. You do such great things. I mean, this, you teach these phenomenal courses that I don't know if everybody knows about that I would love you to speak to and also to share, you know, where people can find more information about population balance.
Sure. Yes. So but population balance can just be found through an online search, populationbalance.org. And then you can find all our social media links through there. I also work at the Institute for Humane Education through Antioch University. And I graduated from there. And now I teach there. And everything that I've learned from that institute has really broadened my perspective to be able to, as I said today, look beyond our limited identities, whatever those limitations we've put on ourselves are, and to include as much as we can other aspects of for compassion. And so I teach two courses there. One is human rights, which is exactly what it is. We look at all the different ways in which human rights around the world are being exploited and marginalized. But then the second course is the one that I created as part of my own graduate degree. It's called Pronatalism and Overpopulation, the Personal, Cultural, and Global Implications of Having a Child. And I very consciously chose that title and subtitle.
Yeah.
Implications being, the personal implications being, who is creating that choice for us? Is that really our authentic choice? And when it's not, which it isn't for most people around the world, what implications does that have on our identity, on our personal psyches, on our bodies, on our future, but also on our children? And then we start going into the cultural implications of what impact does procreation have on children, the children, the humans that they become as contributors to society? What values are they bringing, depending on how they've been raised? And then what implications does it have globally, on the planet, on non-human beings, on environment, because of overpopulation? And how does overpopulation feed into all of the current crises, including human rights exploitations that we face?
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much. We'll also put a link to that on our website and on our social media as well. I can't thank you enough, Nandita, for being here today. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. Please share your comments and questions on any of our platforms to continue this conversation, and join us again next week at the same time. We're with you in community. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to New Legacy Radio. We hope Christine and her guests have given you the context and insight to connect with our community in new ways. What personal or professional change might you consider to acknowledge and include in our diverse community of people without children? Until we speak again, we invite you to engage with us on any of our platforms.